If you enjoy this podcast, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and visit our website at lifebetweenthevines.com.
We all met at a shareholders meeting in another winery. We spent a couple of months working with that winery and realized it was never going to be what we wanted it to be. So over a bottle of wine, one of the Steves suggested we start Three Steves Winery, and we kind of laughed it off. And somewhere between the third and the fourth bottle, it became a really good idea.
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 561. This week we feature Steve Zagotti, proprietor at Three Steves Winery, Livermore Valley. One of the most enjoyable traits of Livermore Valley is the lack of heavy traffic. Wineries are only about 15 minutes away from each other, but each very individual. Three Steves Winery is a must-see when you visit. Of the original Three Steves, Steve Zagotti is the remaining Steve fully involved with the winery. Affordable wines, great hospitality, and nice folks. What's not to like? You can also hear Steve on our Vino Lingo segment defining the term Cabernet Pfeffer. Well, back to Livermore, California, and we continue with today. We're going to be here with Steve Zagotti, and Steve is Zagotti. We're here with Steve Zagotti, and Steve is one of the three Steves of Three Steves. What a surprise. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. How are you, Ray?
I'm excellent. Good to meet you. Good to be here. A lot of things to say about this particular space, but for a moment I'm going to tell our listeners, like often, we are in a working winery in a working tasting room, so you're going to hear a lot of stuff going on in the background. Thanks for taking the time today. I appreciate you being on the program.
Honored to be here.
Well, you may not be when we're done. No, I'm only kidding.
We'll see.
Yeah. For a moment, I want to just talk about this particular location. Why Livermore?
So that's a great question. So I was raised up in Healdsburg in Sonoma County, big wine region. And my father made a little bit of homemade wine, but I really didn't get into it until I got out of the Air Force in 1976 and started making some wine with friends as a home winemaker. Left that for a while, went back to my day job, which was medical instrumentation. And when I retired in 2008 from that job, my wife said, twice as much husband, half as much money. This is not going to work well, Steve. You need to start that winery. Because I'd always talked about starting a winery. And I was living in the Santa Cruz Mountains, which is another great wine region. And I had planned on doing it there. But I started to meet some people in Livermore and meet the winemakers in Livermore and saw the most collaborative effort I've ever seen in a wine region, where everyone works together, everyone helps each other, everyone, something breaks, you're getting it loaned from another winery before you realize it. It's a great place to make wine, great growing region. We get a little morning fog, we get nice hot summer days. It's a perfect spot, so I decided to uproot from Santa Cruz County and move to Livermore and start a winery here.
What year was that?
So in 2010, we got our license to make wine. So we made some wine between 08 and 10, kind of testing the waters on making larger amounts, because it's not trivial to go from a home winemaker making 5 gallons of wine to a winery making thousands of gallons of wine. So in 2010, we got our license. We had a little tasting room downtown, and I was commuting back and forth from Santa Cruz, which is about an hour and 15, hour and a half, and started looking for a place to live, and I found this property. And it's gorgeous. We sit on the top of Greenville Road, the highest winery in Livermore. Oh. Beautiful views. Again, great growing climate. Had some vines planted here. Had the beginnings of a winery that we spent a lot of time remodeling to get it to the point where we could open. We spent about 2.5 months remodeling before we opened. And then been growing ever since.
Excellent. Yeah, you do have this incredible view, and I mean incredible, of the hills just behind you here. Is that a particular range there, or what is that?
Well, Mount Diablo is the most well-known one that you can see from the front of the property, and actually the back of the property here, too, once you get past the trees. But no, it's just the Tri-Valley area, which is Livermore, Dublin, Pleasanton.
Just that name, Mount Diablo.
Yeah,
yes.
Mount Diablo, yeah. The Devil's Mountain.
That's right. Get your attention immediately. Like I ask pretty much every winemaker, is kind of like to go down the path that you chose to become a winemaker. I mean,
Were you raised in a winemaking family? Did you just grow this love of it? I mean, how did it come about? It's not something you just roll out of bed and say, I'm going to be a winemaker.
No, not quite. But starting making wine with my friends back in the mid-70s when I got out of the Air Force got me kind of hooked on it. I was raised in a very Italian family, and cooking was always a big part of that. So, for example, you have someone over, you cook your favorite pasta dish, and when they bite into it, they say, oh, my God, that's so good. You feel good right here. Same thing here. When you open a bottle of that wine, you pour it for a customer, and you get an oh, my God. It's a good feeling thing. So it's something I always enjoyed doing as a home winemaker. And then again, in retirement, I'm not one to sit around with the remote control and watch TV. So I started a winery, not realizing how much work it was really going to be.
Oh, if I've heard that once or twice.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. And as a quick aside, the Cabernet is excellent.
Thank you.
It's really full-bodied.
2017.
Yeah. Oh, really? Nice. Yeah. Just a great mouthfeel and a really nice finish.
Thank you. Thank
Something
you very
I live
much.
For. There evidently, somewhere along the line, were two other Steves you picked up. How did that happen?
Well, there were is key there. So we all met at a shareholders meeting in another winery. We spent a couple of months working with that winery and realized it was never going to be what we wanted it to be. So over a bottle of wine, one of the Steves suggested we start Three Steves Winery, and we kind of laughed it off. And somewhere between the third and the fourth bottle, it became a really good idea. So we started Three Steves Winery, and that went on for quite a while. And about 3 years ago, Steve that had the idea of the name moved to Texas to be close to family. About a year and a half ago, Steve Berman moved to Delaware to be close to family, leaving the old guy, me, as the sole proprietor. So Three Steves is now really me, myself, and I.
No, oh, that's not as much fun as Three Steves.
We get along really well.
Yeah. What's that old line? You're never alone with a schizophrenic.
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
No, let that go.
And then once Steve Berman left, and I bought out his share, Steve Melander still owns a small percentage, my son approached me and said he'd like to get involved. He's a general contractor. So I said, okay, Jason. So he's running events now for us and doing the facilities and learning the winemaking process. About the same time, a young assistant winemaker from town, his winery moved up to a place called Napa.
I've heard of it somewhere.
Yeah, they make auto parts.
Yeah. Never heard that before.
Yeah. So he didn't want to move, and he was over here, and we started talking, and he wanted to get involved with the wine business again, so I hired him as assistant winemaker. After 2 years, promoted him to winemaker because he's doing such a great job. So if you've ever seen the movie My Cousin Vinny,
yes,
I got the two Utes.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Very cool.
So we're actually putting that on the back label now. That
oh,
the
nice.
The Utes are helping Steve.
Very
yeah.
good. Yeah. yeah. You know, for you, is it a little more gratifying to have fuller control of what you're doing? I mean, or is it just a matter of you're kind of following the same
yeah,
path?
Yes and no. You know, when Steve Berman left, I was getting close to my 70th birthday, and I really considered, what do I want to do going forward? Being here solo, Steve Berman and I made all the wine together. And we I think we made a very good pair, you know, kind of a yin and yang.
Yeah.
You know, we really fed each other nicely. So I really thought hard about what I was going to do before Alex Wolf, who is my winemaker now and our general manager, approached me. And I started working with him. I thought, no, I'm going to go in this long term. And then having my son involved with it, now I've got someone to hand it off to eventually. Don't plan on going anywhere for quite a while. But it gives me something to look forward to or an out if I ever decide I want to do that.
Sure. Or maybe even just a moment to catch a breath.
Exactly.
Which is not always easy when you own a business.
I'm going to Maui for 5 weeks in November.
Well, could you stay a little longer? I'm willing to say that I'm envious. Good
yeah.
for you. But you deserve it. Any business owner, anybody in this country who's an entrepreneur knows that it is 24/7. I've said this a million times.
Yep.
And you get to a point where it's like, I'm going to breathe.
Yep.
And you have to. Yeah.
People don't realize what it's like to own your own business.
No, they don't.
And how dedicated you have to be to it. There's no pushing it off to someone else. There's no walking away from it for even a week in most cases.
No.
But now I've got that opportunity. These two are really doing well. Alex is just turned 30. My son will be 40 in September. They're both killing it.
Which is amazing because you're like 29, yeah. as I've already brought up. So you are a very youthful-looking guy, so kudos to you. But when it comes to a winemaker, maybe letting go might not have been so easy. What do you look for in a winemaker?
Well, so of course, the end product. but to start with, you look for attention to detail. You look to what impressed me on Alex right away was when we're getting ready to, we started making some wine from his father-in-law's grapes for him, and then he was going to help me with mine. It was a Chardonnay. And when we laid out where we're going to go and what tanks those wines were going to go into for fermentation, Alex immediately dove in and started very aggressively cleaning those tanks. Cleanliness is an absolute must in a wine business. You get the wrong bug in there and it'll spoil that wine. You know, Mother Nature gives you this gorgeous fruit and she hands it to you and says, don't screw this up. And there's a million different ways to mess it up. So you start by everything is cleaned and cleaned and cleaned and sterilized. Then you go and you put your product into it. When it comes out, you clean and sterilize it. At the end of the day, just because it's going to sit and then be used it the next morning, you start over again cleaning and sterilizing. So that attention to detail was a big, big deal. And then just talking to them about ideas and, well, what kind of yeast are you thinking about using? And when do you add the nutrients? And kind of quizzing. And there's all these little details, again, that can really throw you a curveball if you're not focused on it. So I look for that. And then his taste as well. Here, taste this. Tell me what you get. You've got to have that piece as well. And mine is not as good as most winemakers, I don't think, but he's got that level. Steve Berman was almost a savant on what he could taste. We were tasting a wine one time, and he says, oh, I get orange creamsicle. That was something I remember when I was 5 years old, but he pulled it out. Alex is the same type of individual that can do that. So you look for that. You look for a good, strong work ethic, because during harvest, there's no such thing as an eight-hour day. You know, we're early, early morning. We always pick at night here. So it's picked in the middle of the night. We get our fruit about 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. And we're typically, on a big day, we're working on it until late that night. So that's another part of it that people don't see when they open that bottle. A lot of work.
Well, this is something I've said a million times, and I'll say it again because I enjoy saying it. As a winemaker, you're a retailer, wholesaler, manufacturer, marketing guy, PR guy, compliance guy. There's just too many hats to fill.
You forgot janitor.
Oh, yeah, I did forget that. Yeah, and that is true.
And cleaning lady.
That's part of the gig, yeah. There isn't a owner of a business who hasn't walked by a space that saw something on the ground that didn't pick it up and throw it away.
Exactly.
Or just take out a little cloth and clean something. That is truly the magic of being an owner. I'm curious, though, in the process of having your son and a winemaker, is it truly collaborative? Is there headbutting? I mean, how does that work out for you?
Rarely there's headbutting. It does come up.
Yeah,
and
sure.
At the end of the day, it's my business. If I feel very, very strongly about something and we're not agreeing, I can pull the trigger and say, no, it's got to be this way. Mm. Maybe at Hardy, rarely comes up, if at all. I can't think of an example on when Alex and I have butted heads. I can think of probably examples where my son and I, but that's father-son.
Sure, that's natural.
Yeah, that's gonna happen. But you have to trust in the people that report to you. You have to trust in the people that work for you. You still watch out for your business and your quality, but we pretty much always agree.
In the end, it's all on your shoulders.
Yeah. And you know, if we're not sure, I said, look, let's put this to bed for the night. Tomorrow morning, let's get up, for example, and taste these wines and see what we think. What do we need to do? How do we need to do this blend if we're not in agreement? And sometimes that fresh perspective the next morning, you agree and sometimes you don't. Steve Berman and I disagreed one time on a blend, and it was a difference of about 1% of a wine in a Zin. And since I owned the Zin program, he said, okay, it's yours, do it.
And it worked out?
And it worked out.
Of course it did.
Yeah, that sold out a long time ago.
Nice. Let's talk about the wines you make. Tell me about, we've got one specific one we talked about, but let's talk about all that you make right now.
So we make a lot of different varietals. The biggest challenge as a winemaker is someone comes up with a different varietal and says, oh, I want to make that, and you pull it in. You can't have too many SKUs in a small business like this, and we're a very small boutique winery. So the ones we're kind of focused on right now is we make a Pinot Grigio, just released about a month ago, local fruit, stainless steel, very nice, very crisp, cleaned. We make a blend called Three Blondes, and the latest version of Three Blondes is Pinot Blanc, a little Pinot Grigio and a little Chardonnay. Again, nice and clean, but a little bit now heavier than that Pinot Grigio. Then we make Chardonnays. We'll do a regular Chardonnay and a Reserve. Reserve is our favorite barrels that we blend for the Reserve. We make a Sauvignon Blanc down in Chile. So in 2014, we started going to Chile and making wines down there. Because why? You can make wines twice a year now, opposite right. seasons.
Yeah.
And we had an interesting problem in 2014. We were running out of wine because that darn San Francisco Chronicle wine competition gave us best red of show for our Ancient Vine Zinfandel. And when you get best red of show, you start running out of wine.
That's how it works.
So our friend Al that makes wine in California and in Chile invited us down to go make wine with him. We've been doing it ever since. So the Sauvignon Blanc's coming from there. We do a Carmenere from there as well. We do a blend called Tres Gringos from there, which is Carmenere, Cabernet Sauvignon, Syrah, and Malbec. Mostly Carmenere, though. We make a Merlot, sometimes as a standalone, sometimes for blending. Mm. We do Cab Franc, Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandels, my favorite varietal on the planet. If my doctor told me I could only have one more glass of wine in my life, I'd have a huge glass of Zinfandel and immediately go find another doctor. So we do a Zinfandel from Healdsburg, Dry Creek Valley, my hometown, and a Zinfandel, this ancient vine Zinfandel I mentioned, from down in Hollister. And then a very obscure one that we make is called Cabernet Pfeffer. And I'll tell you more about Pfeffer later, but it's a light-bodied, peppery finish on the wine. Really interesting wine. I just grafted some of that over this year, in fact, on our vineyard.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing more about that.
And we do a sparkling in Method Champenois.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What are you making that from?
Pinot Noir and Chardonnay.
Nice. Yeah. Very cool.
About 60% on average Chardonnay and the rest Pinot Noir. Pinot Noir on the skin is very, very short period of time. It's basically got a very, very light pink hue to it. And being made in the Method Champenois, it's that's the only way to go in my mind.
About how many cases total production?
Roughly 5,000.
Okay.
So yeah. Nice. We've size. Been up to 8 when we won that award and then kind of settled it down a little bit. We don't do a lot of wholesale. We're not in a lot of stores. We're not in a lot of restaurants. We sell probably 95% of those bottles right here in the tasting room.
Oh, cool. Do you have a wine club, I assume?
We do.
Yeah, I figured as much.
Yeah.
Yeah. But kind of stepping back to what you're talking about, one toe, I'd say, in Alsace with the Pinot Blanc. That really surprised me. Raised my eyebrow, in fact.
First year we made it was this year.
Yeah, really?
We used to use Sauvignon Blanc for our Three Blondes blend, but since we're not making a U.S. Sauvignon Blanc anymore, everything from Chile comes up in bottle.
Mm.
So we grow it there, we blend it there, we bottle it there, and then we come up on a container ship.
Are you actively involved with it down there?
Absolutely.
Or? Okay, that's
this is the chance. Only year I haven't been down, and that was because I mentioned to you privately earlier that I had some open heart surgery and I couldn't go for harvest this year.
Yeah. That might have been a challenge.
That would have been a challenge. The doctor said, no.
You may go, but you may not come back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you don't want that to happen.
But yeah, Pinot Blanc's first time.
That's really interesting just to go down that particular path.
Yeah.
Is just not a commonality.
I really like it.
Yeah.
The place we get our Pinot Grigio from, she had this other part of the vineyard. I said, well, Rosemary, what's this? She said, oh, it's Pinot Blanc. She says, I'm sitting heavy on it this year. I said, well, I'll take some. We'll try it. That's how I got started on Pinot Grigio. Hey, I'll try it.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where sometimes I have this weak moment where I should say no to more SKUs.
Yeah.
But it worked out really well in our Three Blondes blend, which is kind of a suave style. Yeah.
The concept of saying no as a winemaker, I don't think is really in your particular lexicon, is it? I mean, it's kind of like, yeah, I'll take a look and yeah, I'll try it.
Yeah.
And, oh God, kill me.
Yeah, exactly. When you say, okay, what? Now I've got all these SKUs. How do I even? You can't do more than, say, 6 tastings in a tasting, because if you're doing more than 6 or 8 or 10, the customer doesn't remember what they liked.
Right.
And it becomes a party instead of a tasting room.
This is a really good point in a tasting room, and I think that's one of the problems people have. They're never going to say no. They enjoy the fact where a winemaker say, I'm going to try something else with you. And it's fine to do a little taste of something, but it can get a little heavy on their shoulders, couldn't it?
Yep. And at 6, I like it. If the people seem like, you know, they haven't been here before, I want to do something special, I'd do a bonus sport.
Yeah.
And one I forgot to mention, so I should have had my list in front of me.
Yeah.
We also make a rosé of Cabernet Sauvignon.
That's not very common.
No. So, and the reason we started was Cabernets get bigger with more skin contact. So when we start processing our Cabernet to make wine, we have a destemmer, not a crusher. So all these berries are then going through a very gentle screw pump into a tank. And as that tank level starts to build up, the grapes on top start crushing the ones underneath. We'll pull a bunch of juice out. And the main purpose was make that Cabernet bigger. Same amount of skins, less juice. So we don't take any of the skins out. And then we decide to make a rosé out of that. It's just wonderful. You get these strawberry notes, which I would never expect in a Cabernet Sauvignon, but there's strawberry notes before it gets all that skin contact and picks up the tannins and everything else.
And best of all, it's unique, just because not many people do it.
And like, there's 5% Pinot Grigio in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
You got to blend rosé.
You'll have to try that one.
Yeah, I would love to try that.
Yeah.
Kind of changing the subject just a little bit, without getting political, if you could change one thing in the wine business, what would that be?
So if I focus on the political piece, I'd say change the way the tax laws are written for a winery. So anybody that has a business knows about your end-of-year inventory. You get taxed on end-of-year inventory.
Sure.
With wines, especially red wines, so we make a red wine. Say I make my 2023. I'm going to make it this year. I'm going to make Cabernet, for example. I'm going to make Cabernet Franc. I'm going to make Merlot. That gets processed. It gets fermented. It goes into barrel. We pull it out of barrel in about 2 years and put it in bottle. We don't start selling that for another 2 or 3 years after that.
Right.
So therefore, I'm sitting on all that inventory and being taxed on it, and I can't write any of the cost of making it off.
Yeah.
So if any congressmen or senators are listening, please, please, please fix that. The rest of it, you know, we're going to do this year, as of January 1st in the state of California, we're going to have CRV, California Redemption Value, on wine bottles. Never happened before.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a little bit of a paperwork pain for us. Winemakers don't like paperwork.
No, because it's always added.
Yeah, so it's a little extra paperwork, but it's the right thing to do because now we make sure those bottles get the recycle bin or get redeemed and go to recycle rather than going into a landfill. So we'll see how that goes. We have until July to put it on the label, CRV and whatever the value is going to be. But as of January 1, we have to start making them redeemable. So people will be more encouraged if they get, I don't know, if it's 10 or 20 cents or whatever it is, bringing that bottle back to the redemption center rather than just throwing it in the trash can.
Just like the good old days of bringing a certain soda product back.
Nickel for a soda bottle?
Yeah. That was a big deal because you could get money.
Oh, yeah.
Like, out of the blue.
We used to ride around on our bicycles looking for bottles.
Yeah, everybody did. Yeah. It's amazing how things have changed.
Yep.
Good God.
And everything else has it, except for alcohol. So now they're going to bring in the alcohol.
It's surprising that's never been thought of. But then again, I think part of it is the empty container issue in a car, and that sort of thing could be a problem, I guess.
Yeah.
So, acreage here. How many acres are you farming?
Oh, so I own 24 acres of land. I'm only farming 6 1/4. So it's nice to have a vineyard out front. It's nice to have your estate fruit. But it makes a lot more sense to go out and source the best fruit you can find and buy it, in my mind. Now, there's other wineries that do all estate, and I admire them for it. But making money in a winery is tough. Making money growing grapes is almost impossible. You know, labor rates have gone up sky high. Water's an issue in California, even though we've got a deluge of water last year. It just doesn't make financial business sense to grow all your own grapes.
And it's too bad because estate is a big deal for some people, but in the end, if they like your wine, they like your wine.
Yep.
To me, Livermore is an impressive place, a fun place to come because it does have more of a laid-back feel. Again, as I mentioned, the downtown area was hopping. Could use a little more parking, but that's a different story.
True.
Just a fun area, and wine seems to be the thing, which is great.
Wine is the focus. And in the land around the area, too, there's a lot of land protected for agriculture, and the city's very, very serious about that. So it's... As a winemaker, it's a great place to be. As a homeowner, going downtown in the evenings for a dinner or just a stroll, whatever, it's also a great little downtown area. Also from a winemaker's perspective and from a visitors coming into the area, you go into wineries in Livermore, you're probably going to meet the winemaker. You're probably going to meet the owner. We're all small, family-owned. There's a couple of bigger ones, but that friendliness, that making you feel at home, like you just walked into someone's living room, is what we're all about. We're not corporate. And I hope we never get that way.
Oh, I hope so, too. Are you commonly here working on a regular basis, or do you just come in when you need to? I mean, how does that work for
no,
you?
No, I live on property. I live about 20 yards from here, 30 yards, just on the other side of the parking lot. Yeah. So I'm here pretty much 7 days a week. Now, as I get older and my son coming in and Alex coming in, my wife and I can get away a little bit more. And other than our annual pilgrimage to Maui, we'll go during the week. We have a little vacation home on a lake, and we'll go up during the week. But on the weekends, I'm typically here. So I try and be here as much as I can to make sure our customers feel welcome. Someone's hard-pressed to walk in that front door without being greeted by me or one of my staff, and the managers are well-trained on that as well. And some of the comments that we get are, God, I just feel like I belong here. And that's what we want. And then the wines, I get a lot of comments like, God, I liked every single wine I tried. And that just, that makes it all worthwhile. Yeah. That makes the long hours and the initial pain of getting something like this started worthwhile to me. I tell people owning a winery is more romance than finance.
Yeah, that's a good way
to put
it.
And it truly is. You know,
that's a T-shirt.
Yeah, I'm sure you've heard the saying, it's easy to make a small fortune in a winery. You start with a large fortune.
Exactly.
So it really has to be something you're passionate about. I couldn't have raised my kids doing this. You know, I had a day job before I retired, but in retirement, I'm just loving it.
What did you do?
Medical instrumentation. Medical devices, visited the top research institutions in the world, the top hospitals in the world, a lot of cancer research, a lot of AIDS research, a lot of basic drug research for new drugs. It was fun.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I felt like I was giving something back to the medical community by being part of that.
Yeah.
And now I'm giving something back to the winos.
And they're appreciating it.
They love it. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was funny that you mentioned, you know, talking to people here. There's a table just behind us here that I think they're still back there that you were spending a little time with while I was getting set up here.
Mm-hmm.
And just your enthusiasm with them. It's such a big deal because it's infectious, and people get into that. And whether they know that you're one of the Steves, or not, it's a big deal. And I'm just curious: do you make a point of letting people know you're an owner, or just do you like to lay below the radar?
Usually not. You know, I don't know if you noticed, but all my staff has name tag. I'm not Steve. I'm so and so.
Yeah.
And people come up and say, "Hang on a minute, you don't have a name tag. Are you new here?" No. And then they say, "Are you Steve?" And my standard line is, "Are you with law enforcement?"
Do you have a subpoena?
And then I say, "Yes, I'm Steve." But I try and not only greet them when they come in the door, but the tables outside, the tables in here, I really do my best when I'm here to make the rounds of all the tables and ask people, "How is everything? Are you having a good time? Are you enjoying the wines? Any questions you might have?" Try and reach out to them.
Sure.
And again, that's the difference. You go into some of the bigger wine regions that are all corporate owned. This is our Chardonnay. Hi, this is our Merlot. It's fun to go out and try wines like that, but I think people want a little bit more.
Oh, I know they want more.
And we get that comment from feedback on Yelp and on, we use Square for our point of sale system. We get a lot of Square feedback that way. We get feedback on Google. And it's the same theme. So, and when we hire someone, we hire for that personality.
Sure, yeah.
And then we do regular training sessions about how to greet people, how to treat people, how to sell wine also. But don't sell wine high pressure.
Right.
You know, there's no contest here between the staff on selling wine or club memberships because I don't want high pressure. I want it to be comfortable and enjoyable and educational.
Yeah. Yeah, it's supposed to be fun.
Yeah, but you don't, and I tell people all the time, and I used to manage a very, very large sales group, don't show up and throw up. You know, don't throw everything at them that you know.
Sure.
When they make comment on something, give them a little details on it. If they want more information, they're going to ask for it.
Well, it's like classic salesmanship. You sell yourself first.
Exactly.
And if you make somebody a friend, you can probably sell as much wine as you like.
Yep.
Well, we've come to the part of the interview where I get to ask my favorite question, and you're welcome to take as much time as you like to think about it or not. I'm sure you've done more than your share of media, and you do get to talk to people all the time. What's the one question you've never been asked that you would like to be asked?
Oh, how much time do we have? I mean, personally, I love to talk about my family, and that's always a thrill for me. And I've got two wonderful children and four grandchildren. And a wife, as of last Monday, of 40 years.
Congratulations.
She's a very patient woman.
Yeah, well, especially with this business, yeah.
Especially with this business. So, you know, here I am here 4 days a week. I'm here 7 days a week, but 4 days a week we're open, and I'm tied up. And she'll call and say, can you come over for a few minutes? And I'll say, in about 15 or 20 minutes, I can be there, because I'm in the middle of something, and I don't want to cut people off. Unless it's urgent, then she'd let me know, of course. But, you know, I meet so many people coming in here, which is really part of the thrill of the job, too. You meet so many interesting people.
Yeah.
I get questions about just about everything. So probably just family.
That's good.
Family's what it's all about. And again, we try and treat our customers like family as well. I mean, Wine Club, it's a no-brainer. Someone comes in new, I tell them, come back, you're family.
That's how it should be.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure our listeners are going to be curious to want to find out about Three Steves. First things first, though, are they able to come here by appointment? Can they just roll on in? How does that work?
Yes, on both.
Okay.
So we suggest appointments. We don't turn anybody away at the door. So on our website, threestevewinery.com, and it's the number three, not spelled out.
Right.
Steves is plural. There is a link to make a reservation. So you can make a reservation. We ask for reservations for parties of eight or more. But if it's two or four, you can make a reservation or you can just come in. We're not going to push you away. Reservations get you, say you're particular and you want to be outside and table in the shade. Reservation's going to lock that in.
Right.
Or it's cool out, you want to be inside where we are today in we call it a barrel room or posada room. You can make a reservation for that table. Reservations go, I think they're an hour and a half. Easy to set up and do, or just walk in the door and say, hey, Steve, I'd like to try your wine.
Well, you had your chance to turn me away, and you didn't, so there you go. And best of all, for our listeners who'd like to learn about you online, what is your website?
It's www.steveswinery.com.
Excellent. Steve, really, really appreciate the time today. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming out. It's an honor. Look forward to seeing everybody at Three Steves.
Learn more by visiting Three Steves Winery, that's with a number three, .com. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast at lifebetweenthevines.com or sign up to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Pascoff. Our web geek is Dan Gisha. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2023.